I'm Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media Interview. On today's show, I'll talk to filmmakers Bill Jones and Ben Timlett, whose new movie is a pop culture lesson in thoroughly modern economics, Boom, Bust, Boom. The documentary's third director and its narrator may be familiar. It's Bill's dad, Terry Jones, of Monty Python's Flying Circus. Stick around. Understanding the market crash suddenly became a lot more interesting, right?
Yeah.
Yes. If you will only sit still for one lesson in how Western economies work, or don't work, I recommend you watch Boom, Bust, Boom by filmmakers Bill Jones and Ben Timlett. The documentary is a masterful explanation of the cycles caused by greed and mass psychosis, accomplished through a combination of historical recaps and expert witnesses, original animation, art, and even South Park clips, plus much humor and song. Oh, and actor John Cusack. The film's third director and narrator is not bad either. It's Bill Jones' dad, Terry Jones, whom you might recognize as a co-founder of Monty Python's Flying Circus, and who's an accomplished filmmaker in his own right. He did, after all, write and direct Monty Python and the Holy Grail, Life of Brian, and The Meaning of Life. Perhaps you've heard of him or them. As for Bill Jones and Ben Timlett, this is their third feature together. Their last project was A Liar's Autobiography, starring the five surviving Pythons. Before that, they collaborated on Absolutely Anything, starring Simon Pegg and Robin Williams. Ben Timlett and Bill Jones, welcome to Mr. Media.
Hello.
Hello, thanks for having us.
Hello. Guys, tell me about the research that you did to bring this story together. I mean, did either of you come to Boom, Bust, Boom with a working understanding of economics, or did you learn on the job?
We basically learned on the job, I think. The script was originally written with my dad and Teo Cochran, who ran a risk management company that helped hedge funds. He got fed up because they were paying him money to give them advice about risk management and then ignoring it. And he was like, "Oh, this is getting infuriating." And then he also actually became a professor at the Rotterdam University. And for that, he was going to give an inaugural speech. And he wrote this speech and he talked about a guy called Hyman Minsky and about the instability hypothesis that he came up with. And this is something that is not taught in the economic schools. And when he wrote this down, he showed it to my dad and said, I want to turn it into an animation. And Terry read it and went, "Oh, this is great. I mean, we should make a documentary about it."
He got very angry and passionate, and I think fundamentally, within it also is the fact that Tay was saying that we need to teach the history of economic crashes and the boom bust cycle, and obviously Tay was saying this is completely omitted by all the mainstream economic universities, whatever. So Terry said, "We've got to make a movie."
And so basically, Tao brought the know-how, the knowledge of economics to the project from the beginning. And the three of us, we really had to catch up and learn from the people we interviewed and from Tao.
We also had a really fantastic researcher called Vicky Patterson, who was brilliant, incredibly intelligent. And it was learning on the job. It was obviously, as you gradually start to delve into it, extraordinary to find out what the system is.
I mean, it's like finding out that the economists had these models, and then finding out what the hell a model was. And after that, it was finding out that these models didn't give you the option of having a crash.
So that they were based on the idea. Crash was impossible.
Yeah, you can't have a crash.
And these were being used to run the economy.
It's like, how can you have something that doesn't include?
And then ideas like collective rationality, or the fact that we're all rational you know, billions of decision making, you know, ends up in a correct decision. It's just like, no, it doesn't. That's
I mean,
just,
it can work,
but then it can fail. But you guys make a point that one of the models that a lot of decisions were made on only allowed for like a 13% correction, and right, and then in the movie you say, well, what if it's more than 13% that it goes down? And oh, well, we didn't model that.
That was them kind of.
That was one of the very progressive people.
Yeah, that had actually done some research into what could happen if the housing market, which everybody viewed as the most rock solid thing that would never go down, did go down.
It's funny. We just watched the Big Short, and it's in that they go, "Oh, you're betting against the housing market. The housing market has never gone down."
Yeah.
And I'm kept shouting at the screen. Yeah, 1929. Hello.
Well, and every time there's a deep recession, a crash, a bubble, whatever it might be, there's a whole new generation that has to be reintroduced to the tulip bubble. They just don't know. They don't know that story. But you would think that anyone dealing with money, that's the first thing that they would learn or be taught, because that's the ultimate cautionary tale.
And it's funny. Teo was saying that they in the colleges, they would be taught it, but it'd be a very side note, a very small thing. And then they go to another class, and then they'll be told, oh, but crashes can't happen now. You're like, yeah. What?
What do you guys say? It's the every generation believes that they're exceptional.
Yeah. But they think they've solved it. Yeah. It's part of Hyman Minsky's, you know, Hyman Minsky is an economist basically ignored and forgotten, worked in the outskirts of the profession. But during the 50s, you know, this was the biggest kind of most boom. So in America, the boom time was writing about instability, about stable times feeding instability, and that's when people start to relax regulations. They start to borrow more than they can really afford, or you know, euphoria starts to take over. Fraud starts to become a factor
because people are taking higher risks. There's more money going around, lots of money, and people are happy. It's easier for people to have frauds.
There he is,
as Mr. Minsky,
as a puppet.
Well, you know, learning about Minsky in the film, and I've done some writing about banking and financial. So I mean, I was interested in this. I didn't know Minsky, but it kind of, thinking about the era that he came out of, it reminds me of. And here I go. I can't think of the fellow's name. There's the character that Benedict Cumberbatch played in a movie about a year ago. The creator of the guy who created the modern computer, a guy who's lost to history, right. Who's discredited, and then, you know, we're kind of rediscovering him now.
Yeah, I mean, what's ironic, what we talk in the film, is that when 2008 happened, his book,
Hyman
Minsky's book, was out of print. I can't remember exactly what it's called, so my brain's gone, but it was out of print. And the irony is that people suddenly were on eBay trying to buy his book because it was the exact explanation of what was happening, and it started to get bid up and up and up. Like, it's appalling. His book's getting bid up to sky-high levels.
Oh, so what you should do is you should, as the movie comes out on DVD, you should package it with a copy of his book.
Yeah, well, it's now, of course, it's now back in print. And in the film, we have Alan Minsky, who's with us actually in New York and is at the premiere on the 11th.
He's Hyman's son.
Hyman's son meets his dad in puppet form.
Yeah, that's great. I want to ask you about that.
Sorry, just to jump in. It's quite funny because, you know, there's me and my dad working on this. We've got Hyman Minsky and Alan Minsky, the son. But we've also got Kenneth Galbraith
and Jamie Galbraith, his son.
And we've got Jamie Galbraith, his son, working on it. So there's father-sons in this film.
It's a very nice touch. But I want to ask you about the puppets and the animation. It seemed to me that there was a concerted effort to make economics palatable. for people who normally wouldn't sit still for this kind of thing. Was that kind of the idea?
We basically made it palatable for us.
Yeah.
We wouldn't have sat down and watched a dry talking heads documentary about the economy, but we'd sit down and watch this.
I mean, I remember we were pitching it to some, I can't remember who it was now, but we were sitting there and one of us said, oh, it's sort of, okay, it's like the history of financial crisis, but with puppets, animation, and song. And the person was like this, and then sat forward and went, oh, and then we kind of thought, hang on, we've got something. We think maybe other people will be like us and we'll actually watch it.
I imagine you must have watched The Big Short and thought, you know, that these two are perfect companion pieces. They both, you know, approach it in a very, well, to use the word again, palatable way to, you know, from...
I think... what I think is important is that we start to try and inject a moral view back into this. It's not, you know, it's not just about making cash. It's
funny. That's a problem the Big Short had is towards the end of it. You're going, they're injecting this moral view into it, and then they're going, these people. Well, no, and the Brad Pitt character, but then you're going. But then these people are still making a lot of money.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Making lots of money now.
Well, you know, in reality, what could they do?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. And
it's going nuts.
And that's the thing about our film is we're not sort of blaming people. It's the system. It's the problem.
Yeah.
And the people help make up the system. But we've got to educate them to try and change the system and help the system curb the problems that people, the inherent biases that people have, and protect us from ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, that's why we drive on one side of the road. I mean, we've been doing this, you know, protecting ourselves from ourselves. We need a system that does the same thing.
I just fall back to when I taught my son how to drive. It all comes down to one thing. I say, people is dumb. If you assume all through life people is dumb, then you will always expect the worst, and you will never be surprised by how stupid people will behave.
You and Teo will get on very well, because he taught his son. He said, when you go cycling, son, cycle like a lunatic, like slowly through the middle of the road. Yeah, because people would think you're a nutcase and keep well away from you.
So how do you guys decide, and maybe I think I know where the answer is going to be, but how do you decide which experts to rely upon to further a story like this? And weren't you concerned about credentialing someone that might be tomorrow's Alan Greenspan?
I mean, you always run the risk, I think. But I think we were finding people who were basically pushing views that were very similar to what our core value of our film was about. I mean, I think we didn't...
We did. We have no interest, really, in presenting the other side for this. If you think about it, the view that we're presenting here is so minute from the mainstream view still today that we just felt we had to get our... across and weren't interested in the, I don't know, the BBC kind of fair.
Well, they've stopped doing it.
The balance, BBC's balance. Yeah. You know, we want to tell you our view, and then go away and maybe look at it yourself. But that was our, and we're, you know, we're very lucky to get some brilliant people. I mean, brilliant people involved. It was incredibly difficult, though, to edit this film. I mean, it was so hard. I mean, just trying to hold these ideas in your head and try and, you know, just getting past the jargon. I remember we spent a month doing a cut the jargon out pass. You know, three types of jargon that basically mean the same thing. I mean, it was really...
Yeah, I mean, it was very difficult. You were trying to cut together a section about a particular thing, and then you suddenly realised, oh, these people are talking about the same thing as well, but they're using a different word. Okay, it means something slightly different, but in our context, it's the same thing.
I mean, these are people trying to help you understand, rather than other economists that want to keep you away.
But they still have to use the correct terms, and that is something that really puts a barrier between the audience that we're trying to show this film to and the information.
Well, so let's talk about the cinematic side of this. Who does what? There's the two of you and Bill's dad, Terry, are all credited as directors and I think as writers as well. But who actually does what?
I mean, we didn't write
we
it.
Didn't
you
write
did
it.
The writing. Okay.
Ayo and Terry wrote it. But it was a and then of course it evolves in the edit. So I mean, really, we
I mean, the way it worked was that most of the time Ben went out with the crew and with Dad, and Dad would do the interviews, and Ben was there on set with them. I was back at the office with the edit. I'd be editing what's already been shot while they were filming new interviews, and that was the sort of the first sort of split. And then when we got back to the edit, me and Ben did most of the heavy lifting of the edit, and then showed it to Dad, and Dad and Terry would then write any VO pieces and things to link any linkage that we needed. And
how different was this film? I mean, the three films you've done, as near as I can tell, are very, very different from one another. How different was doing this from A Liar's Autobiography or Absolutely Anything?
Well, Absolutely Anything is a... we didn't direct. So the other film that we did, the series, the Monty Python Almost the Truth documentary series, which we co-directed as well.
And that's a talking head documentary.
And that's
a talking
head documentary with clips.
And that's the most that's the most similar to this one.
Yeah,
obviously. And
but then Liars was a completely different. I mean, Liars is 17 different animation styles. You know, the story is narrated by Graham Chapman from his book. It's adapted from his book. It was a completely different kettle of fish. But we still work within three directors, actually. Which was quite good because it means that, you know, two of you can go hammer and tongs over something, and then one person.
And then you realise you're not getting anywhere, and then you stop, and then you turn to the third director and go, well, I guess you're deciding what happens. You've got the deciding vote.
So it works out. I mean, in the edit, when Bill and I were in the edit together, there were moments when suddenly we just kept having the same idea. We were like, well, what's the point?
What's the point of there being two of us when we're having the same idea? It's pointless.
Oh, so the next film will be cheaper because only one of you will do it.
Yeah, maybe,
maybe. Bill, and Ben, I apologize, but you're probably used to this. I have to ask you, why on earth did you follow your dad into the family business? I mean, there must have been easier things to do than to go into film, especially to wind up working with Dad, let alone be doing the same business.
It's a fun business. I mean, there is a lot of shit in. I mean, you know, raising money for film is very, very difficult, and there's a lot of shit in there. But when you're actually doing the job, even with this film, when we had a real tough time editing, it was still, you know, it's still better than building cars or, you know, you know, it is still a very nice job to do. And to be honest, I didn't have any other. I mean, I from a young age, I'd always be a cameraman or an editor. And I became an editor. When I joined the world, I became an editor.
And what's the difference between being Terry Jones's son and working side by side with Terry?
Not much. I mean, he's such a nice character to work for. You know, everyone on the film set loves him. He's just such a nice person. I mean, he remembers everyone's name. I have problems remembering people's name who work in the same building as me. But he remembers everyone's name on the film set, and it's like, you know, so he's such a wonderful guy to work with. So, you know, working with your dad is not a problem like that. It's not like I'm working for Terry Gilliam. We're very friendly with Amy Gilliam, whose daughter
produces for him.
He does a lot of jokes.
Poor Amy.
Poor
Amy.
How funny. And Ben, so I know how Bill got into the business. Obviously, It's a family business. I reference it. How did you wind up in film, and how do you guys wind up together?
Well,
basically,
we grew up together. So
we met when we were four.
We went to nursery, primary, and secondary. We've been Bill and Ben since we were four, basically. And then I actually did go to university for a short period, and then left and basically joined him. And we'd been making films together, you know, as kids, and it was Terry.
It was our first movie we ever made together was called Free Parking, about a Monopoly game that goes too far.
And then we made a film called Invasion of the Wheelie Bins. You know, top class,
top quality. Yeah.
I mean, so Terry, I think Terry. I don't know if you want to know the story.
Terry.
Bill's got an older sister and I've got an older brother, and we live in the same area in South London. And Terry, this is I'm actually not sure whose story this is, but Terry was dropping off
my older sister, and he sees this little boy wandering around and goes, "Hello, little boy. I've got a little boy at home about your age. Do you want to come home and play with him?" And the last thing Ben's mum sees is a strange man and her son waving goodbye. And him driving off.
Got in his car and he drove off and shouted, "I'll bring him back at the end of school."
Sure, he will.
My mum was like, "I think I recognise him. I can't believe that just happened."
So we've been friends ever since.
So I'm the hanger-oner.
I doubt that.
Yeah.
I do doubt that. And since I have a minute, I got to ask. And you guys have worked so much on the Python material together. I got to ask: do you have a favorite Python movie? Do you have a favorite Python bit?
It's difficult to get past the brilliance of Life of Brian. It's the perfect comedy film. I have like maybe another one or two that I think are up there, but. In terms of the absolute perfect comedy film that delivers a message as well, it's extraordinary.
I mean, the bit we used in the film from Life of Brian is my favourite. I think is the you're all individuals. We're all
individuals. I love that.
I mean, that is just such a wonderful, wonderful moment. I mean, I also love the fact that when we did Almost the Truth, the 40th anniversary, documentary about the 40th anniversary. we researched the hate that Life of Brian got from the religious community in America, and it's like, whereas in England, that you had all these communists going, "Ooh, they really stuck it to us, didn't they?" There was also a lot about having a go at the communists party, and it's.
Apparently, yeah, you couldn't chat splitters anymore.
You know, I had for the life of me, I can't think of his name. Maybe you guys will know. I had the fellow who edited most of the Python movies on.
Julian Doyle.
Julian Doyle, yes.
Yes, we were very close. Julian taught us how to edit.
Yeah, we produced a film he directed called Chemical Wedding.
Yeah.
Is he still with us? Is he well?
He's great. He's written a new book. It's about
the life of Jesus.
Yeah. How close the film is to actual reality.
That was why he was on the show. So yeah, we had him on, and he had Life of Brian playing on the TV screen behind him, which I kept thinking that's going to be a copyright issue at some point, probably, right? Somebody's going to watch that and go.
The Pythons own it.
And they know
Julian. Okay. He's up to all kinds of dodginess.
All right. Well, if it becomes a problem, I'm going to come back looking for you guys.
We can sort that out.
If you think of it, please give Julian my best. I'm glad to hear he's well.
We love him dearly.
And so what's next for you guys? Once this film has gone through the cycle, what's next?
Well, I think the natural progression is a children's film. I think that's what you should do after a film about a documentary about the economy.
It's not a talking against documentary.
It is.
It is.
Right. It is.
We're doing a film called
Sherlock Holmes is the case of the missing Santa Claus.
Is that true?
Yes. It's based on true events, of course.
Oh, okay. Well, I meant, is it true that you're doing that film?
No, okay.
It's not like there aren't any Sherlock projects out there at the moment. That's why I had to ask.
No, we're not just hitting two great brands there.
Yeah, we're not.
I think the film you need to do is the story you told me a little while ago about Terry Jones driving up and seeing a young boy about Bill's age and picking him up and taking him away for the day. I think that's got to be a movie.
Maybe a short film.
Well, I don't know.
90 minutes.
some pretty interesting things happen in the Python films where, you know, Terry's done, where a lot can happen in an hour and a half.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, listen, it was very good to meet you. And folks, you can see the documentary, Boom, Bust, Boom, written and directed by Bill Jones, Ben Timlett, and Terry Jones, and I probably got the credits a little mixed up there, but it's in select theaters as well as on iTunes and on demand on cable and satellite TV services, and probably coming to be available via DVD at some point later in the year. Is there a website? Is there Twitter, Facebook for the film?
Yeah, the website's boombustclick.
.com.
And another website, economy.com, which is a whole movement that's come out of the film to try and re-educate people and try and change the way economics is taught.
Very good. Well, Bill Jones and Ben Timlett, pleasure to meet you both. It was delightful. I wish we had more time. And I hope the next film you'll come around and talk to us about Sherlock Holmes and Santa Claus, whatever it may be. thank you so much for joining us on Mr. Media today.
Thank you very much.
Is recorded live before a studio audience full of people who always knew Alan Greenspan was full of shit, but were more afraid of his journalist wife, Andrea Mitchell, than they were the head of the Fed, in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida.
That's a good one.
Thank you.